You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education After School. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as always, by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Mum, we are back for another questions episode where you, our listeners, send in your questions via our anonymous Google form in the bio of this episode and our social media channels. We're at the RSC Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and X.
Oh, formerly known as Twitter.
You can't have forgotten that time.
I wasn't listening.
No, and to be fair, I did do a weird cadence for that, so I can understand why you missed it. But I'm still not happy about it. But what I am happy about is the questions we've got today, and we're going to get straight to them. It's The Real Sex Education. These are sex and relationship questions from you. You can send them in, like I say, in the bio of this episode and our social media channels. This one, however, is from Spotify. On Spotify, if you listen, we can ask you what's on your mind, what do you want to ask us about? And this person posted, are there any optimal sex positions when using a smaller penis? How do we destigmatize smaller penises and the men who have them? What can men do to navigate cultural pressures to have a large penis? Going to answer the question?
I thought you were.
Why?
I thought you were taking this over.
No. I keep having to tell you this, that would be a shit podcast. A guy with no qualifications comes on and just asks himself questions and answers them.
But you do that anyway. What can men do to navigate cultural pressures? I'm not sure that there are cultural pressures so much nowadays. Men have lots of banter with other men, and there are sort of tropes about big willies and things like that that go around, but it's dying out a bit. I mean, I think it's starting to be seen as a bit silly. And when it comes to women and their attitude to big penises, and also a lot of men who have sex with men, they're not that bothered about the size of the penis. They really don't care. So I think that's dying out. So you're unlucky if you're in a kind of milieu where that is the pressure. But sex positions, we're talking, I guess, about length, are we? Or are we talking about width?
Well, it depends. Potentially both. But I think, again, some people go, oh, well, obviously, I want my penis to be as long as possible. Which actually, you know, I'd be interested to hear from people. From what I can tell is when you're being penetrated anywhere, the length is less the thing you're excited about. The thing you're excited about is the girth and the width. So even if you have a chode, something that's more wide than it is long, that might actually be not the worst thing in the world.
It's not the size, it's what you do with it and all of that.
Yeah. But I think we should say that and say that properly. You know, and also, it's not just intercourse that matters here. There are so many other ways to have sex and so many other things you can do to pleasure your partner and for your partner to pleasure you, that having a small penis shouldn't be the biggest barrier.
I think most people who think they have a small penis don't as well.
Yes, and I think this is what I wanted to say before. I'm so sorry to cut you off. The milieu that you're talking about, I do fear that sometimes, you know, it's things like some porn and stuff where it's like, oh, you're so big. And to be fair, you'll see these porn actors who are specifically chosen because they have ginormous penises. But then again, if that's the all you see, not real life, so people who remember are acting and saying, oh my god, isn't this huge penis amazing, and people who have been cast specifically for their atypically sized penises, large penises, that is going to affect you.
Also, there's the angle as well that you filmed at.
Right, exactly, which makes it seem bigger.
Bigger, yeah.
For example, I went to the set of Central Perk, you know, the coffee shop that the guys go to in Friends.
Oh, it's
It's fucking tiny.
When did you go there?
Years ago. Yeah, yeah, maybe like 10, 15 years ago. It is tiny. But because of the perspectives and stuff on TV, these things make bigger. Look at the behind the scenes of Lord of the Rings. They're actually always in the same scene together, the hobbits and Gandalf. But it's, again, it's all perspective. Which, so you can do
amazing.
What's that?
It's the pub on Coronation Street.
Is it tiny?
Tiny.
We went there when I was a kid.
We went there.
In Manchester, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Exactly. Got to think about perspective with porn and all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, so you're probably worrying unnecessarily. Mm. So I'm just thinking the best position, is that the best position for you or for the person that you're penetrating?
Wonderful distinction.
So it's difficult to know what the problem is either way. Right, and so if you're penetrating anally, it might actually be more comfortable if your penis were smaller. If it were longer, it would probably be less comfortable, actually.
I know someone who is in a polyamorous sort of situation. She has a long-term partner and then partners on the side. She was like, with my husband, I don't like really doing anal with him that much because his penis is too big. However, one of her partners, much smaller penis, loves having sex with him, but anal sex specifically.
Mm.
So, you know, that's that thing where it's like, don't despair too much.
So what we're talking about, I mean, I think if you're having sex with someone who has a vagina, then being sort of downward dog type position is probably good.
You can get deep in that one.
You can get deep. So then you would have the guy standing, the person with the penis standing, someone sort of leaning over, maybe supported on pillows with bottom in the air. Underneath them. So
face down, ass up, as they say.
Yeah. And girl on top, because they've got control. Now, if you feel that it's a really, really tiny penis, any position which brings your legs together is going to be helpful.
Because
it'll make it feel fuller. Yeah. But I mean,
Those things
don't really matter. I mean, if you're the kind of person that has a clitoral complex, which is near the surface, and you're able to have orgasms with it that way, then you will anyway, you know, because it's quite close to the outer end, the vaginal wall. But otherwise, you know, it's stimulation of the clitoris, whichever way that does the job. So it's not going to make any difference.
Yeah,
some people do say they like the idea of being filled up.
But, you know, again, can I just say there's a level of fantasy to that.
Yeah.
Some people it is true and that's definitely the case, but I've talked to men and women who've been like, you know what, there is a penis size that is absolutely too big, and it's this fantasy that isn't that great. There is such a thing as the quote-unquote boyfriend dick, which is, you know, sort of basically normal sized, you'd say, quote-unquote normal sort of average, which is like big enough but, you know, not painful. And then you go to smaller. But then again, like I say, there's people that I know who are like, well, that's perfect for anal. And like we've just said, with the, if it's a woman you're stimulating, it's maybe more about the clitoris anyway, and there's other ways to enjoy yourself. But I think that the sex positions you've gave are great.
Yeah, and women on top as well, if you're on top, it's easier to stimulate the clitoris against the pelvic bone or the shaft. If you're on top. So, you know, that's very helpful.
Yeah.
Cowgirl type, reverse cowgirl, sort of sitting astride the guy, means he's hands-free and can stimulate the clitoris as well, or you are hands-free and can stimulate the clitoris. So that's helpful too. So really, you know, I don't think penis size is important.
No, exactly. So if we can start dispelling that rumour now, I mean, it fucking well better not be. then
Diggs, no.
What?
No.
What?
No.
What?
No. No.
Why not?
No, I'm your mum.
Sorry, yeah. but, you know, that's important. So we can start here. We can start doing our bit to try and dispel that.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, let's have another one here. This one says, hello, I am 20-year-old bisexual from India. Recently, I have started seeing this guy and have started to quite like his company. He is aromantic, but I am not. He says I am the only person who feels comfortable doing mildly romantic things. Things have been moving too fast, and I don't mind that, but he does. He never been involved this much before. We both are scared this might not work out, and it will end up hurting either one of us or both.
Yeah. What's the question?
That's what I was hoping you'd tell me.
I don't know.
I know.
I think this is somebody sort of worrying that their partner is feeling things are moving too fast and they're not feeling that things are moving too fast, and they want reassurance that that's okay and they're not going to be scared off. Can't really give that reassurance.
I agree. Yeah. I sort of feel like this is this moment where, for me, maybe I'm too soppy about this sort of stuff, but this for me is that beautiful moment at the beginning of a budding relationship where whatever happens, happens. You've just got to take it one day at a time, enjoy what you're doing with this guy. It sounds like you guys are checking in and chatting about things and you're seeing where you're at and seeing how you're comfortable. This all sounds great, but you can't know what's going to happen. That's the beauty of it. You need to be curious and
word of caution, if they are saying it's going too fast for them, it's going too fast for them. And the fact that it's not going too fast for you doesn't mean it's not going too fast for them, and that you have to respect that.
Great point. Listen to what they're telling you.
Yeah, listen. And you know, you don't have to rush, as Diggs says. You know, slow, enjoy.
It sounds like you really like this person. It sounds like you guys are talking about things. You're in tune with each other and how you're feeling. This sounds great, but there's nothing really we can tell you that will give you assurances either way. You just have to live this. But that's the fun bit. You know, you're at the beginning potentially of a budding new relationship. And there often is an excitement with the fact that it's not a relationship yet. This is a fun bit where it's like, oh, what's going to happen?
It's about finding out, isn't it?
Exactly. Mm. So best of luck and let us know how it goes. Mm. Wonderful. Okay, we're going to have a couple more questions after the break, including one that I cannot wait for. It involves medieval England, involves you know, self-flagellation to some extent. Mum's making a face, but listen, guys, if that's not a hook, I don't know what is. We'll see you after the break.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is, but that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to, so please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hattrick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drinking with dignity. Yes, sir. Yes, madam. That's me all over.
Welcome back to the Real Sex Education After School. We have another question here from another one of you guys listening, and it says, hey, I'm sort of struggling with an all or nothing libido. I'll get really ridiculously aroused out of nowhere, then about 5 to 10 minutes into the deed I get completely bored and turned off. So both neither me nor my partner finish. It's not that it's bad sex. I'm actually with my best partner so far. Yay me. But I just, lose interest very quickly, Not sure what's up, or if y'all know what's going on. Cheers. Female 20, Malta. Smiley face.
Hmm. I wonder what constitutes best.
Interesting.
Because an awful lot of women lose interest when intercourse starts. Because a lot of the touch that's been exciting stops when intercourse starts, and the couple rely on the penis to do all the work, and it may not do it.
How have I feel like we haven't said that out loud on the podcast yet, but that has blown my mind. Yeah. Can you say it again? Just for me?
No, you can clip it and repeat it if you want to.
Brilliant. okay. So what you're saying is, you know, the touching, the caressing, the kissing.
It stops.
that stops. So when intercourse starts.
Well, so there is wow. a sort of feeling that intercourse ought to do the job, ought to finish the job or whatever. And also people have had an orgasm before intercourse sometimes.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, all the sort of loving touch, all the things that turned you on, stop. Might continue kissing, but quite often a lot of the, you know, breast stimulation, clitoral stimulation isn't going on because the guy's resting on his elbows, busy pumping.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's all there is to it.
Wow. I feel like that is just so true. And I honestly, that's sort of blown my mind. And I feel like I feel like we haven't properly in such a way said that before on the podcast.
I don't know why people don't realize that. I have had people sit there with their partner and say, well, obviously, if we're going to have intercourse, I stop touching her so she doesn't come.
And, oh.
Right. Guys are trying to not get too stimulated so they don't come too soon. And they think that girls are the same. And of course, they're not.
No.
And they need the stimulation. They need more stimulation. Whereas that, you know, the guy might be getting it a different way.
Yeah.
So
and a woman could orgasm and
a woman can
going.
Orgasm a billion times.
Yeah.
Girls
exactly.
just can keep going.
Yeah, which sounds brilliant. but yeah, as a guy, you're sort of like, well, if I do this, you know, I can keep going, but I'll have to do other things and, you know, it might take a while to reload and all that sort of stuff.
Well, I genuinely think that some guys just do not realise that women work differently.
Yeah. And fair play, why would they? I know that sounds bad, but unless you talk about this sort of stuff or know, you know, why would you know?
If neither of you are very experienced, you might not feel able to talk about it very easily, or you might not have the knowledge to talk about it very easily and explain what you want. I mean, if you don't know what you want or what works for you, then it's really hard to know. I mean, increasingly, and I'm finding this a lot at the moment, an awful lot of women are saying they don't orgasm when they actually do.
Yeah.
Because there is too much overstimulation of the clitoris, often with a sex toy. So the vibration numbs it out. So it's not subtle enough. And so their body reacts as if it's orgasming and the clitoris becomes very sensitive afterwards. But there's no pleasure involved.
Wow.
So seeing a lot of that.
This question actually, unless I'm mistaken, doesn't mention the gender or sex of their partner. So let's say then, though, that their partner isn't a guy.
Yeah.
Then what would, because about the intercourse thing, what would you say then? If I get completely bored and turned off?
That's fear of being too close sometimes.
What I thought you were going to say earlier. Why when you said about the best partner thing and what were their best partners, because you've said this before, sometimes when people find their best partner or best sex partner, that's when it starts to mean more.
When it's somebody they feel really close to,
That's
when sometimes people find sex much more difficult and they close down. Because now it matters and you want to please them and you're afraid of losing them and that sort of thing. So absolutely, that's...
And that could be the case here. Yeah, wow. Okay, well, I think something to think about, if it's intercourse, then keep doing the stuff that turns you on. Maybe doing that thing that we talk about a lot on the podcast, which is taking control of your own pleasure again. And if you get bored, then what you've said before about fantasizing, you've said before about thinking about what your sexual turn-ons are and reincorporating those.
I mean, obviously, touch yourself as well, if that works. Show your partner what you enjoy, move their hands, talk about it. I mean, also, if you stop feeling it, then it's okay to have a break and come back to it. And, you know, if that's all you're going to get today, it could well be anxiety that's cutting it off as well. You know, it's about experimenting and learning to relax, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
You know, just has anything else changed? Like, have you started to take a different medication or something? Because sometimes antidepressants in particular can make it more difficult to orgasm. And if you had no problem before and if you can come quickly when you masturbate, then that's, you know, then don't worry. But if you used to be able to come quickly and now you're not, even when you're masturbating, then I might see a doctor and, you know, get blood sugars checked, that kind of thing. Have a think about what might be going on for you there.
Yeah. I mean, great advice.
Sometimes it can be the first sign of something. But I think this sounds much more likely to be psychological or to do with technique.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Okay, amazing. Let's have this last one, the one that I...
This is your favourite.
I think it's a great question and I can't wait to ask it. So here we go. This comes from man, 23, gay, from Paris. And they've done the cheese emoji. I guess Paris, you know, the Parisians
didn't send us
French
a picture of cheese, though,
cheese.
Did they?
That bastard. Okay, here we go.
Would
they
have been
say,
nice next time.
I am really turned on by chastity cages. I would like to wear one, but I am a bit scared of pain. Does the cage prevent from having erection? What if it doesn't? Question mark. Isn't it painful? Isn't the point of wearing a chastity cage to be aroused by the fact of wearing it?
Depends on the type of cage you're using, to be quite honest, what the point is. But I would like to see next time a little cage with a camembert in it, if you don't mind.
What, so they can send a picture of their lunch and their
meanwhile,
French cheese. So, but we just need to, what if people don't know what a chastity belt is?
Oh, right.
Or a cage.
Well, in this case, there's a sort of ring that sort of holds the penis in, and the testicles and penis are sort of bound together, and there's a cage over the top with a key that somebody takes away.
Yes.
So you
yes.
can't, so you have to.
You can't, if you get an erection, there's not enough
room
in
there.
So it will hurt.
So, and that's the point. People like the pain.
Yeah.
I mean, they like the idea of being controlled by somebody else and that they can't masturbate or anything unless this other person wants them to.
And if they get an erection, it's like they're being punished for their sexual thoughts.
Yeah. So some of them have got spikes in there.
Yeah, but this is what's worrying about chastity cages and chastity belts is there's a fine line between people who do use them these days for BDSM and stuff. Mm. There's some suggestion they were used in medieval England for genuinely keeping... usually young women
chased.
Yeah, keeping them chaste is obviously the word for it, but keeping them so that they aren't deflowered, so to speak, although maybe we'll talk about that in a minute. But also there's the thing of they're used for sexual torture.
Mm.
And the spikes and stuff in there are like, you know, there's a, is it in Prague, they've got a sex museum there,
which
I went into, and
did
like
you?
It's really fun. You go and you think, oh brilliant, and there's this amazing sculpture outside with a huge penis, and you take a photo of it and you think this is great. They had a film of the earliest lesbian porn film / lesbian scene on film. It's from like the 1910s or 1920s something. Mm. Amazing stuff. And then you get upstairs and it's all sex torture instruments, and you're like, well, this isn't the vibe I was going for. Filled with chastity cages and chastity belts. So in this case, it sounds like this person is going for a cage. And yeah, it's the idea that if you get an erection, if you even start to, it will probably hurt a bit.
Well, the point is not to get one. It's supposed to stop you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the point. So you're not aroused by anything else but your partner, and that's when they want you to be aroused.
Which, to be honest, that sounds quite hot. I can get why people are into that in the sort of BDSM way.
Mm.
I do think, though, you know, your concerns are understandable. And I looked up stuff up on this online, which, again, I always feel weird about doing in the office. I'm just expecting the IT guy to come up to you and going, we know what you're looking at, you little freak. What the hell do you think you're doing? And I have to be like, it is work, I swear. People talk about online, firstly, you know, why they find it arousing. And we sort of talked about that. But then they talk about the fact that one person, this is just one person's, and they wore it a lot, and they were like, at first, it does hurt, you know, getting an erection in such a small space. But then basically he was saying he just started getting fewer and fewer erections, and it did sort of train his body into being like, oh, this is going to hurt. / it just hurt less when he got an erection in there. But also people are concerned that their penises will be smaller. And again, this person was saying that it did actually appear to him smaller when he eventually took this thing off. But within a few days, it was back to its normal size.
Well, I guess it'd been all curled up.
Exactly. It sort of has to be. It's, you know, it's just like a little animal in there that's sort of like, you know, getting a little bit scared and the threat of pain. But anyway, so what do you think then, based on what we've talked about? Chastity cage.
But
I'd like to wear one, but I'm scared.
He's saying, isn't the point to be aroused by the fact of wearing it? The point is the point is not to have an erection, really.
Well,
and maybe to be aroused by the pain, maybe. But I mean, I guess what you could say is you wear it for whatever reason, personal reason you choose. There could be as many as there are humans. But if you're scared of it, don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, unless being scared is part of the fun. I'll jump out at you and go boo if you like, if that would help. But there are the sort that you wear outside. I mean, I think the clunkier ones are quite big and the portable ones are not so obvious. So, you know, because you can see it through clothes with some of them.
Because I'm imagining, I don't know if you saw, I think this is the film, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Have you seen that film?
Not lately, not for years.
I'm pretty sure in that Maid Marian may have had a chastity belt.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And a chastity belt is slightly different to a cage. I think a cage is for... A cage, actually, now I'm thinking about it, it's probably for chaps.
Yeah, right, it's for... Yeah. This is only for men. Whereas the chastity belt is around the waist. Yeah.
It's around the waist and it's
and
meant
through,
to stop...
between the legs, yeah.
Exactly. And it has this huge keyhole on it and, the holder of the key is probably the sheriff...
Of Nottingham.
Of Nottingham and all that sort of... I can't really remember.
Who played the sheriff of Nottingham? Was he Hart?
Probably. I mean, obviously, we all know the best portrayal of the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Who was that?
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Mum, your favourite, Alan Rickman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good.
Exactly. Plays a total daddy in that. Although I would recommend people go back and watch that. It is a rather bizarre performance. And it's a really kind of weird film, actually.
Who played it in the Disney one?
What? The fox?
What animal is the Sheriff of Nottingham?
Let's look this up. He's probably a wolf or something, right?
Raccoon, I seem to think.
A raccoon?
Well, yeah. Or what are the smelly things that are black and white?
Hang on, no. Is it a big bear?
Oh, not you. Oh, penguins got upset.
Oh, no, no.
You're not smelly. You're all right.
No.
A bit fishy.
Okay, so Prince John was a lion. The rooster, Little John's a bear. Sir Hiss is a snake. No penguins so far. Friar Tuck's a badger. We've got Lady Cluck, who's a chicken. here we go. The Sheriff of Nottingham, as I suspected, was a wolf. Played by someone called Pat Buttram. Careful.
Unfortunate.
Just, you know... We can't. It's just in the context of the anal that we were talking about. Okay, amazing. Well, maybe you need a buttering ram to get through this chastity belt. Not quite. Anyway, listen, can I just say as well, just before we get any scholarly history nerds getting on our case, most historians believe that the chastity belts were rarely, if ever, used in medieval Europe. As a means of controlling women's sexuality. Instead, they argue that the idea of chastity belts was popularized during the Renaissance period by writers, artists, and playwrights who were fascinated by the concept of female chastity and sexual control.
Yeah, well, it doesn't sound wonderfully hygienic, does it?
No, exactly. Also, I mean, maybe you wouldn't agree to that sort of thing anyway. But then maybe there were some kinky bastards around at that time as well. I wouldn't be surprised. Not calling this wonderful listener a kinky bastard. But they could be. What are we saying then? Just if we can, if you're worried about it being painful, you know, maybe don't do it. But at the same, and we're never going to recommend on this podcast doing anything that's going to cause anyone any pain
or anything you don't want to do. I mean,
or anything you don't want to do.
My huge caveat here is if somebody else is wanting you to do this and it isn't something you want to do, run.
However, if it is, like you say, something you want to do, try and find a way to ease into it. Maybe buy
experiment.
A big belt, an experiment. But, you know, maybe...
Yeah, don't experiment with made-up versions. Get a proper one. And with proper keys and a spare.
Yeah, and there's chest communities online who can help you.
Yeah.
Read up with them. Look up what's going on there. Go for reviews. You know, really take
there's
your time with this.
There's loads of online shops. Absolutely millions of them.
Yes, but like you say, make sure you get stuff that's well reviewed.
Yeah, don't just get a little plastic toy looking one.
No, exactly. Yeah. That won't do.
No.
That won't do.
No.
Thank you so much, everyone, as per usual. I hope we can all agree. What a cracking question. That is the sort of stuff we love because...
From Gay Perry.
Yeah, exactly. Literally.
Don't forget the cheese, please.
Don't forget the brie, please. if you could.
Inside.
But you want camembert,
if you get
you?
It. Yeah, well, like, only because it's round and it's sort of fit better than a fit big green might.
So this person's going to buy their new chastity cage.
Yeah, just to keep their cheese in.
Just to keep their cheese in.
Yeah.
Just send us a picture. If you sent us a picture of that, you would be forever goated.
It would break the internet, wouldn't it?
It would break the internet. And, you know, maybe you'd be in line to receive a bloody real sex ed mug. Because, honestly, that'd be amazing. We can get some camembert in there. Wonderful. Everyone, subscribe. Follow wherever you're listening to this now. Comment on YouTube. We're loving all that. And say hello to us there. Say if you can see us and give us a wave. All that sort of stuff. And you know what? Keep telling your friends and your family if you're that way inclined. But that is actually the best way to get this out there. Tell your friends. Share the podcast. Find an episode you think they'll like. Maybe even this one. Don't chastise the podcast. Don't keep us locked away for yourself and your own deranged pleasure. Spread the love.
Deranged pleasure. What are you like?
I don't know. I've gone a bit mad.
Oh,
wonderful.
Dear.
I love you all very much, and we will see you next time for more of your deranged pleasurable questions next time. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.